This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, once again, sports fans. This is Dana Augusta once again for week four of the Historically Speaking NFL Matchups, where we once again highlight the best of pro football from back in the day. And in this episode, we're getting you ready for week four of the NFL regular season by looking back at four games this week that are rematches from famous games from years past to evoke memories for some and bad memories for others. This week, we will begin with a game that a lot of people, including myself, consider as the most important game in the history of the New Orleans Saints. Not only it was significant for a team, but after a certain event, it was so important for that city. You actually could say it was a rebirth. And of course, of all teams, it was against the Atlanta Falcons. Speaking of important games, there was another game on another Monday night that put another southern city on the map thanks to a Heisman Trophy rookie running back that still remains as a Lone Star legend and has also introduced a very colorful era for an NFL franchise. Finally, a pair of frigid playoff games. One of them features a famous play call that had become the bane of that city's existence now for close to 50 years. And another postseason game that not only saw a traditional loser reach the promised land, but also closed the door on one of the NFL's most infamous stadiums. So that is what's going on here at this week's edition of the NFL Historical Matchups, this week for week four of the NFL's Historically Speaking Sports Podcast, where we talk about the best of sports from back in the day. Heading into week three of the 2006 NFL season, few teams were as hot as the New Orleans Saints. Coming off of two road wins heading into their home opener against their longtime rival, the Atlanta Falcons, on September the 25th of 2006. However, this was no ordinary home opener. This would be the first time the Saints would play on the floor of the Superdome since December 26th of 2004. Now, for all of 2005 regular season, the Saints, for lack of a better term, were in exile thanks to Hurricane Katrina, one of the most powerful hurricanes ever to hit the continental United States. And after extensive repairs and renovations, the Superdome was back open for business. Green Day and U2 performed. Former President George H.W. Bush was part of the coin toss. And then there was the game. Over 70,000 fans packed the dome and more than 10.8 million viewers on television watched, making it the largest audience for ESPN live program at the time and the second largest cable television audience ever. On just the fourth play of the game, one of the most iconic plays in the last quarter century in sports and by far the most famous in New Orleans sports history, when safety Steve Gleason blocked a punt and defensive back Curtis Deloge managed to land on the ball in the end zone for the Saints' first score of the game. The noise inside the dome was deafening, and at this point of the game, it was the ABC or ESPN actually decided to pause the game and allow the cameras to show the crowd cheering for a few minutes. And after the whole and after a whole season on the road, the Saints were back. Former Saints kicker Martin Anderson helped the Atlanta get his only score of the game from a 26-yard field goal. But from there, the Saints dominated the rest of the game. For the final score of the first quarter, wide receiver Devery Henderson ran in 11 yards for a touchdown on a reverse. Then kicker John Carney provided the scoring for the rest of the game as he kicked 2 second quarter field goals, 37 and 51 yards each, and then one in the third quarter, a 20-yarder, essentially to wrap up the game. From there, the Saints defense continued to put pressure on Falcons quarterback Michael Vick as they sacked him 5 times while limiting the running of the duo of Vick and Louisiana native Warrick Dunn to just a combined 101 rushing yards. With their dominating performance, the Saints took the lead in the NFC South with a 3-0 record on a 23-3 win over their arch rival, the Atlanta Falcons. The Saints will go on to finish the 2006 season with a 10-6 record and advance to the NFC Championship game for the first time in their history, where they would eventually lose to the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field. In the second game of the four that we will talk about is another game that took place on another Monday night. On Monday, November 20th, 1978, the Miami Dolphins, still a power in the AFC, was on the road to face a new power in the NFL, the Houston Oilers. Now, of course, you know them as the Tennessee Titans, which at that time was led by Heisman Trophy winning running back Earl Campbell. To boost team spirit, the Oilers gave each fan a blue and white pom-pom before the game. The sight of over 55,000 fans waving the pom-poms would inspire the Oilers. So much so, this game would be looked upon by sports historians as the beginning of the Love Ya Blue era in Houston. The Oilers came into that game with a 7-4 record while the Dolphins were 8-3 on the season, while both teams came in this matchup on Monday night before Thanksgiving. In front of the capacity crowd, the back known as the Tyler Rose had one of the most memorable performances in Monday Night Football history. In a wild back and forth game with Miami, the Oiler back ran for 199 yards and 4 touchdowns, including a game-clinching 81-yard touchdown run down the far sideline late in the game to give the Oilers a 35-30 win over the Dolphins. Years later, ABC lead commentator for Monday Night Football, Frank Gifford, who called the game for television, stated numerous times as this was the most exciting game he had ever witnessed. Just a couple of years later is where we find our third great game from back in the day. On July 4th, 1981, the Oakland Raiders, who defeated the Houston Oilers 27-20 in a wild card matchup the week before, took on the Cleveland Browns at Cleveland Municipal Stadium on the shores of Lake Erie for the AFC Divisional Playoffs, with the winner traveling to sunny San Diego for the AFC Championship the following week. With the game time temperature at 4 degrees above zero, it was the coldest NFL playoff game since the Ice Bowl of December 31st, 1967. With the weather a considerable factor, it was a low-scoring defensive struggle. And it was the defense that led directly to the first points of the game, where midway in the second quarter, Browns defensive back Ron Bolton intercepted Oakland quarterback Jim Plunkett and returned it 42 yards for a touchdown. However, Don Cockcroft's extra point was blocked by Ted Hendricks that kept the score at 6-0. However, right before halftime, the Raiders would get on the scoreboard when fullback Mark Van Egan would score on a 1-yard plunge with 18 seconds remaining in the half to make the score 7-6 at intermission. In the third, the Browns would score on a pair of field goals to extend to a 12-7 lead heading into the fourth quarter. On the first drive of the final quarter, the Raiders put together an 80-yard touchdown drive that featured a crucial 27-yard completion to Raider tight end Raymond Chester. The drive concluded with another Van Egan 1-yard touchdown run to give the Raiders a slim 14-12 lead. Now, what happened after that has now become both NFL lore and Cleveland heartache. On the final Browns drive of the game, quarterback Brian Sipe completed clutch passes to tight end Hall of Famer Ozzie Newsome and running back Greg Pruitt. Then Mike Pruitt added another 14-yard run to the Oakland 13 with 49 seconds remaining on the clock. Now, instead of going for the game-clinching field goal, Browns coach Sam Ratigliano called for a pass play. Red right 88, instructing Sipe that if no one was open to, quote, throw it to the blonde in the first row. His intention was to give the team one last chance to score a touchdown before running the ball on third down to set up a Cockcroft game-winning field goal. Unfortunately for the Browns, on the pass play, Sipe was intercepted by safety Mike Davis in the back of the end zone while trying to connect with Newsome, allowing the Raiders to escape with the win. The words, Red Right 88, some 44 years later, still haunts Browns fans. Now, to round out this week four historic primer for you, we have the 2002 NFC Championship game between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Philadelphia Eagles. On January 19, 2003, it would be the final game at the infamous Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. The Buccaneers were in the NFC Championship game and were looking to exercise some demons in this game. First, heading into this game, the Eagles had beaten the Buccaneers four consecutive times, which included two wildcard games from the previous two seasons. Secondly, the Bucs had never won a road playoff game in their history. And third, and even more bizarre, at the time, Tampa Bay had never won a game, regular season or postseason, where the game time temperature was below freezing. Game time temperature, 25 degrees. Despite all of those things going against the Buccaneers, however, behind their defense, which was highlighted by a game-clinching 92-yard interception return by Rondé Barber, it propelled the Bucs to their first ever Super Bowl appearance and ending the game that is known in Philadelphia sports lore as Black Sunday. For the Bucs, they would go on to defeat the Oakland Raiders in Super Bowl 37, 48-31 in San Diego for their first Super Bowl championship. Yet there's also a very interesting footnote to this game. This was the first NFC championship game ever not to feature the Cowboys, Redskins, 49ers, Rams, Packers, or Vikings. And that will do it for week four of the Historically Speaking NFL Matchups. Thanks once again for listening. We will try to come at you with these mini episodes every week during the NFL regular season, highlighting great and memorable games from the long history of the National Football League. And as usual, this podcast comes to you from the Bill King Memorial Studio in the sports wing of TM4 Enterprises, located in suburban Atlanta in the shadow of Stone Mountain. To get more content of the Historically Speaking Sports podcast, you could catch us out at Twitter X at HistoricallySP, or you could also send us a line at historically.speaking.sports@gmail.com. And if you have not done so already, please, please, please subscribe to the show. It would definitely help us out a lot. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your neighbors. Hell, tell a passerby on the street about us if you think they like sports history. And until the next episode, stay blessed, stay cool, and be at your best at everything that you do. It'll make the world a much, much better place. Thanks for listening. See ya.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, We're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.